You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Thursday, October 17th, 2019, and I am your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy Locked On Jets, consider subscribing to it. You can do so on your favorite podcast source, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. And please leave the show a good review if you do enjoy it. It's Thursday, which means we turn to the mailbag. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. We'll start with a question from Jason, who emailed this to me. Hey, John, I heard a lot of back and forth about the Darnold interception against Dallas. Some people are saying it's his fault, that it's a bad read, while others are saying Crowder ran the wrong route. To my untrained eye, based on his performance up to that point compared to how badly the play missed, I think that the receiver just ran the wrong route. I'm not trying to nitpick the performance. I'm just interested in learning how these things happen. What do you think? Well, I'll start off by saying whenever I evaluate a play, whether I'm writing it, whether I'm talking about it, I'm not in the huddle, so I don't know. I can't ever give you anything with 100% certainty, and I always try and put a disclaimer whenever I describe a play. I would say that just because Darnold's playing a good game does not necessarily mean he is totally absolved of fault. Even when you're playing a good game, you can make a mistake here or there. I watched the play over, Jason, and I kind of understand the argument there, because it seemed like there was miscommunication between Darnold and Crowder. And it seemed like, it looked to me like there was zone coverage Dallas was running, and Darnold was expecting Crowder to just sit in the zone, and he continued his route up the field. And I'll say this, a lot of these interceptions, they go on the quarterback's stats, but it's actually, I think it's actually somewhat rare that an interception is totally on the quarterback. Typically, there's blame to go around there. You know, sometimes it's not a great play call. Sometimes the offensive line contributes by not blocking effectively. And in a lot of cases, the receiver and the quarterback have to share some of the blame for this. I get it, though. I do kind of see where maybe people could put it on Crowder, because, you know, the way I was reading this, and again, like, it depends on how it's coached, because you can coach a guy to run a play any number of different ways, but I do kind of see where people might pin it on Crowder. I do think it was kind of an erratic throw from Darnold, but I think there was just miscommunication, and based on what I saw, I'm not totally sure Darnold was wrong. I think Darnold may have been right, that maybe Crowder wasn't, but just based on like what I think a receiver should do based on that coverage, I kind of do feel like it may have been on Crowder. You know, I don't want to totally absolve Darnold, because again, I don't know, but I am sympathetic to that interpretation, because just based on what I saw, because I try and follow this when there's a miscommunication and see, you know, where the ball should have gone, what the receiver should have done. And I am kind of inclined, you know, it's funny, because I was at the game, and when I'm watching it live, and, you know, when you're at the game, there are some benefits to it. Like, there are things I noticed about the way the Jets were running their coverages that I was able to pick up on. There's things you see. There's some advantages to being at the game, but there are also advantages to watching it on TV. And, you know, at the game, I totally pinned it on Darnold. It just looked like an inaccurate throw, and you don't get all the replay angles that you get watching on TV. And then rewatching the play later in the week, you know, I looked at the coverage the Cowboys were running. I said, gee, you know, maybe Crowder should have ran that route a different way. I mean, at the end of the day, if it was an interception, if it's Darnold's fault, it does not take away from just the incredible game he had. And look, he certainly was entitled to make a mistake. I don't think that nobody's perfect. Even if you're playing a spectacular game, you still might make a mistake here or there. But yeah, I would at least put part of that on Crowder, I think, just based on what I saw. So, you know, it's a good question, Jason. I'm sorry I can't answer it completely, but that's kind of the way I see it. You know, and again, I'm not in the huddle. I don't run the offense. So I am, I can only tell you what, I can only give you my best guess based on what I see. I'm never 100% when I'm breaking down a play. Next question. We have lots of questions about trading Leonard Williams. We've got a question about, you know, what my threshold would be to re-sign him. Should they trade him? What would a good trade look like? So I guess I'll combine all these into one question. You know, the thing with Leonard Williams, I think he actually played, rewatching the Dallas game, he was actually pretty disruptive in that game. This was a game where, you know, he may not have filled up the stat sheet, but he actually was really fine. He was very disruptive in the middle, which has not been the case for him. I mean, there were too many instances over the last 2 years where he's just been blocked out one-on-one. which I think is, kind of frustrating. I do think there's probably a price where it would make sense to retain him. I mean, the thing with Leonard Williams, and part of this is, like, we don't know exactly what he wants. So it's one of the things, like, I'm somewhat critical of the Jets on for not addressing this sooner and maybe getting a discount before he's about to hit free agency. But, you know, I'm not entirely sure with what he wants. I guess, you know, one suggestion was maybe $12 million. I would be tempted to do it. You know, the closer we get to 12, 10, 11, $10 million, I would consider doing it. I think the question is, does he want Fletcher Cox money? You know, does he want Aaron Donald money? That's too much. That's too rich for my blood. But, you know, if we're talking like in the low eight figures, you know, 10, 11, $12 million, I may be inclined to re-sign him. You know, there were some questions, you know, should the Jets trade Leonard Williams for a player? I think player for player trades. We saw one in the NFL with Marcus Peters a little bit earlier in the week where the Ravens sent a player to the Rams for Marcus Peters. But I think those are tough to do at this point of the year because I think they're tough to do in season, period, because if you're going to do a player for player trade, I think it kind of has to be done. It almost has to be done in the offseason because if another team's trading a player away in the offseason, they can sign a replacement. Whereas you trade a player away this time of year for, you know, a player for player deal, you're not going to be able to sign a replacement. So the teams trading players away typically do it for picks because if I'm a seller, then I don't really care what happens to my season. But if I'm trying to compete this year, it's a little tougher to trade away a player in order to, you know, weaken one spot to upgrade another spot. So I think typically the in-season trades you'll see will be player for pick because the team that's trading the player is kind of in sell mode. They're kind of looking to the future. They're not necessarily concerned with this year, so they're willing to give up a player even if they don't have a replacement. You know, if you're trading player for player, though, typically I think both teams are going to want something. I just think it's tough to do. So I'm not sure that'll work out. And there's some questions about, you know, what proper compensation would be. I mean, look, 2 years ago, there was no reasonable way the Jets should have expected to get a second-round pick for Sheldon Richardson. Seattle made a panic trade. Seattle made a bad trade for Sheldon Richardson. So you can hold out hope that somebody panics and gives you a second-round. If somebody gives a second-round pick for Leonard Williams, I would hesitate to not do. I would hesitate to hold off on that. I think I'd have to do that. You know, I think some of the buzz has been a third-round pick. I think for a guy, if you're not going to re-sign him, and again, part of this goes back to his contract demands, but if I'm not going to re-sign Leonard Williams, I'd have to think long and hard about a third round. I think I would do a third round pick for Leonard Williams. I think I would. I may hold out, though, till the deadline to see if he gets on a little bit of a roll here, because if he does start playing better, maybe you can get a little bit more. Maybe you can work that up to a second round pick. Locked On Jets podcast, Mailbag Thursday. We got a number of questions about officiating, which is not all that surprising given the events of Monday night. I had one question about changes I might make to the NFL. Another listener named Zach emailed me with the Rugby World Cup in full swing and the NFL appearing decidedly less interesting from my perspective, at least. I've caught a few rugby games. One difference in the format that stands out that I think the NFL could benefit from is that the refs are mic'd up for the entire game. The benefit seems to be increased transparency of the reffing decisions, as well as adding interest to the game during boring penalty decisions. It seems like each year there are more and more penalties being called, too many reviews, and just generally what seem like questionable decisions. These reviews also feel like they're taking longer and longer. Seems like miking up the refs could help make some of this more interesting, as well as helping the audience understand what goes into seemingly questionable decisions. I like Mike Pereira and all, but this seems like a more direct solution. What do you think? I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know whether that's going to improve their refereeing, but I do like the idea of... I guess I like the idea is that this is like every NFL fan base. You go on the internet, every NFL fan base thinks like there's some sort of officiating conspiracy against their team. So maybe by miking up the referees, you can at least get rid of that. You can listen into their conversations. At least every single fan base thinks the refs are out to get them. The refs are just out to totally destroy their team. So I think that would be a positive from Mike after refs. But I think it's interesting. That's an interesting idea. And there, like I said, there was a kind of a similar question. What would I do to improve officiating? And, you know, I have two ideas, and I don't know how much this would help. But, you know, one thing I think you have to note is that the number of officials in an NFL game has not been consistent throughout the league's history. The league through the years has added officials to the field at various points in its history. And it was the 1970s was where we got to our current number of officials. You know, when we started out, I believe there were only like three officials in the NFL. And then gradually over time, they added more officials, and we got up to our current number of seven in 1978. And it's been a long time since the NFL added another official to its standard crew. And you think about everything that's happened in the league since 1978, how much bigger the players are, how much faster the players are, and it's just tougher. You know, you have the same number of officials to, it just makes the job tougher when you consider how much faster the action is today with the modern athlete. It's tougher to, these guys have to read the same amount of the same size of the field that they had to read in 1978. It's tough. So I think the first thing I might look at is adding an extra official or two, you know, adding more officials to the standard NFL crew just to make the responsibilities a little bit lesser for everybody. I'm not sure exactly how I'd do it. I'd have to, you know, something you'd have to consider, but that would be the first thing. And the second thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, we talk all the time. Everybody always talks about how the NFL needs a spring developmental league so players can learn how to, you know, to develop players. But that also goes for officials, too. I think a developmental league would help officials as well. You know, you think about baseball. I mean, baseball minor leagues are for the players, but they're also for umpires. They're also kind of where umpires learn their craft. And, you know, umpires from the minor leagues get called up to the big league. So those would be the two ideas. I mean, I don't know how much that would help. I think the problem right now, the NFL seems to view the answer to its officiating problems as just adding more and more things that are eligible for instant replay so they can correct mistakes. But I think the NFL should be more focused on preventing those mistakes from occurring in the first place. Now, I know some people suggest the NFL officials are part-time. Some people have suggested making NFL officials full-time, but I don't know that would... I mean, the NFL doesn't play that often. I mean, we're talking, 17 Sundays a year during the regular season plus four more for the playoffs. And they only play once a week. I mean, I don't know that making full-time officials is really going to... What are they going to do the rest of the time? What are they going to do the other weeks of the year that's going to make them improve their calls on game day? I'm skeptical of the idea making officials full-time is going to really make a big change in things. So I think my two suggestions is in dealing with officiating is, first of all, maybe adding an extra guy to the crew. Because, again, we've been at the same number since 1978. And it's become the tougher and tougher job, and it's totally got precedent in the NFL to add more officials to the crew. He's done it plenty through the years, and the other thing would be, again, developmental league, not just for the players but the officials, it would help as well. Next question, Marcus Peters: should the Jets have made an offer on him? The price wasn't steep for a Pro Bowl former Pro Bowl corner who was a bad scheme fit in LA. I think Peters is actually off to a pretty good start this year, but, you know, I think it's tough to answer because he's a guy who's been up and down in his career, and moves like this are kind of like my barometer moves for front offices as far as I'm concerned. Because, see, the thing for me is, like, anybody would know, like, you or I would know that signing Le'Veon Bell is going to help a team's offense. Most players are not as skilled as, you know, when we get past the star level, most players aren't as skilled as Le'Veon Bell. So that's really where you find out about the quality of a front office. So you have to figure out a guy who has a certain skill set. Will his personality fit? Can our coaching staff, does our coaching staff have the ability to get through to this guy? Will we figure out a way to make him work in our system, maximize his skills, limit his limitations? So it's tough for me to say on a guy like Peters without, you know, doing a lot of research, but I think this is the type of thing that's kind of a barometer for front office quality. And the reason that I'm kind of segueing into something else here is these were the types of deals that Mike Maccagnan was not very good at. I mean, Rashard Robinson comes to mind, where they're giving up a late round pick for a guy who just can't play. And in contrast, I think of the Joe Douglas move so far, I mean, Demaryius Thomas had a good game. I'm still a little skeptical on that trade, but of the guys who were unheralded, I think two of them look pretty good so far. Alex Lewis has really impressed me. I really focused on the offensive line on Wednesday. On Wednesday, I rewatched the game, but really focused on the offense. Alex Lewis is playing some good football. This was a guy, you know, it shows what I know. I remember I said of the two offensive linemen the Jets acquired in the summer, Ryan Khalil would be the big addition, and Alex Lewis, I think I called it a nothing burger. And Alex Lewis is playing well. And Nate Hairston in limited actions also playing pretty effectively. So, you know, I think that those are the types of moves. And again, it's very early in their careers. I'm not ready to declare either a success so far, but those are the types of moves, giving up a late round pick for a guy who can step in and fill a role for you. Those are the types of moves that like the good front offices do. The hitting on those and missing on those is frequently one of the things that separates the good front offices from the bad front offices. So on the specific question of Peters, you know, it's tough for me to get on the Jets because I just don't know. Yeah, I haven't done enough research to figure out whether he'd be a good fit or not. But I think the early returns on this front office, and it's very early. I don't want to get too crazy with declarations, but I think the early returns on front office for these types of deals, these kind of buying low on guys deals, is looking pretty solid so far, which is encouraging. My bookie is fast and easy, and they pay when you win. Where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Did you know you can bet on games after kickoff? If by second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always take the other side. And if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, you can try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win. You get paid. Locked On Jets podcast here on a Thursday, Mailbag Thursday. Our next question: with early 2020 draft picks, I say the Jets should use their first two selections on left tackle and center. It worked in 2006 with Brick and Mangold. What's your opinion? Well, I don't think you can ever go into a draft saying, I'm drafting this position no matter what, because let's just throw it out. Let's throw out there a year like 2015 when the Jets had the sixth overall pick. If the Jets had gone in there and said, I'm drafting an offensive lineman no matter what, odds are they would have taken Eric Flowers, who was a total flop, total bust. So I don't think you can always say that, because there has to be a good player that's available at the value you're picking. So I don't think you can make definitive statements like that. But I do agree that it should be skewed toward the – I think if all things are equal or close to equal and there's a good offensive lineman who's the right value for where you're picking – I would probably pick offensive line over another position. So I would not take it to the extreme where I'm saying no matter what, because that's where you make mistakes. That's where you make bad picks. But I would say if I'm not taking an offensive lineman, there needs to be a really good reason why I'm not, because somebody else in another position is so much better that I just can't pass on him. I think if all things are equal, offensive line is the spot that I'm looking at, because it's such a rarity in the NFL these days. So that's key right there. Next question: of the upcoming Jets free agents, who should be priorities to be re-signed? And so the question that we list the number of guys: Robbie Anderson, yes, he'd be a priority. I would not want to break up. You can just tell he has chemistry with Sam Darnold. And for me, that's something worth. I mean, if Robbie wants crazy money, if Robbie wants to be like one of the top five paid receivers in the NFL, probably not. But I tell you, I stretch a little bit to keep him just because I don't want to break up chemistry that Sam has with his wide receivers. So that's the first guy mentioned. Jordan Jenkins. I got to be honest, I'm not that high on Jordan Jenkins. I think he's a good player. I would not stretch to keep Jordan Jenkins, though. I think the Jets have edge rusher issues with or without Jordan Jenkins. So that tells me if I could get him for cheap, sure, I wouldn't pay a ton of money for him. Brian Poole. I like what Poole's doing. I think if Poole keeps playing like this, sure, he'd be a priority. Lachlan Edwards, I'd try and resign him. I wouldn't go overboard though trying to get him. Alex Lewis, if Alex Lewis keeps playing like this, then yes, I'd try and resign him because he's going to be a cheaper alternative to Osemele. So I'm impressed by him. Sam Ficken, again, like I wouldn't go crazy to keep him because you can get kickers off the scrap heap. You know, if you don't let him go, just do a better job this summer. Don't bring in shaky kickers without any competition in training camp. That's the only thing. I mean, I've said this many times. I don't think the problem was refusing to pay Jason Myers $4 million. I think the problem was that they brought in shaky kicker after shaky kicker and provided no competition in camp. How different is everything at the kicker position if they just signed Ficken before week one? So, I'd try and sign him. I wouldn't go crazy, though. Demaryius Thomas, I need to see more. Maybe if he keeps playing the way he did on Sunday, I need to see more, though, on that front. I can't go crazy on that. I don't want to go crazy yet on Demaryius Thomas. Next question, is it possible that Gase is a very good offensive mind and has a hard time with quarterbacks who can't process the game at a high level? The book on Tannehill seems to be that he has the physical tools but is dumb as a box of rocks. Darnold, on the other hand, seems to be a very fast learner. Gase just might be able to get the most out of him, hopefully. Well, look, I think if you're a good offensive mind, you have to be able to work with quarterbacks of all types. I think for me, the if you're trying to talk yourself into Gase, look, I don't think you can really defend the job in Miami. At the end of the day, he left that team behind, and they felt like they had to just totally tear down the roster. I mean, some people are saying they're tanking. Shows you what he left behind. So I don't think he did a good job. I think the case for the head coach of the Jets is that people can learn from their mistakes, and people can grow. You know, coaches can grow into better coaches the second time around. I think that's what the hope is for Gase. And the other hope is, you know, I said this. You go back to January. You can hear me saying this. I always felt this was true. I think that Sam Darnold is going to do a lot more unless the Jets had hit a home run with their coaching hire. I think it was almost guaranteed Sam Darnold was going to do more for their coach than the coach would for Sam Darnold. I mean, that's the thing I'd say is it's, I think a lot of anybody could look good as a play. I could probably look good as a play caller if Sam Darnold's seeing the field like that. Sam Darnold's a difference maker. He has the potential to be a difference maker at least. So I think that's a key right there. And our last question, backup quarterback. Is Gase not learning from his mistake with Falk and now going with another Miami reject and David Fales? Especially when you consider Cody Kessler, Landry Jones, Tom Savage, and Brock Osweiler are all available in free agency. Maybe not Osweiler since he retired. All are not great, but at least competent backups so you don't have to dummy up the game plan if they have to start. And they all have some starting experience. Some even have playoff experience. Well, look, I think that the Jets are going to have to do a better job with backup quarterback this offseason. And I don't think it's just the Jets thing. I think the league as a whole does not put the emphasis on backup quarterback that it should. I think that this whole experience has kind of got me thinking on that front. And I think too many teams in the league settle for guys who just aren't that good because they can justify it. I mean, look at Trevor Siemian. Trevor Siemian, you sign him, and you have a bunch of scouts talking about how, oh, let's look at this guy's record in Denver. Well, that's not really. I can't believe scouts say that because that's not scouting. That's just looking at the. That's just looking at like a box score and assigning a team's win, a team's the result of a game that a team played to one player. Simeon's not any good. I think Gase. Yeah, there's again. This is not one that I think you can really defend. These were his handpicked guys, whether it was Trevor Siemian or Luke Falk. These are the guys he wanted. These were the guys his handpicked backup quarterback and his handpicked project quarterback. And he, you know, I think he clearly got it wrong. Now, Fales, I get why they signed Fales because if you're signing a guy in season, you want him to be comfortable with the system, you want him to be comfortable with the playbook. So I get why they brought in Fales. I think that this was not a position that was handled all that well by the Jets in the offseason. In retrospect, I mean, I thought Siemian was okay. I think I was wrong on that one. They need to do better. They need to get a better guy this offseason. I don't know that any of these guys is really going to do what the Jets need them to do. I just think this is a position that has to be addressed better in the offseason. And Gase needs to do a better job. By the way, Gase needs to do a better job as well if he ever has to play without Darnold. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think you can blame Gase for losing to New England or Philadelphia without Darnold, but I do think in a league where you're looking at backup and third-string quarterbacks go out there and play effectively, the fact that the Jets can't average 2.5 yards per play in some of these games, that is on him. He's going to have to, I just think he has to improve in general. I think the Jets need to evaluate their quarterbacks better. I think the coaching needs to be better when Darnold's out. That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast source, and leave it a good review. Hope you have a great Thursday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to close out the week.